All right. Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Sounds like a lot of really great things are going on. And today we're going to, more towards the end of the show, be announcing more and more events that are happening this week. At the beginning here, the show that is largely about the environment, I have Kalasara helping me. She just went to Antarctica, and I have Gordon Labetz is on the phone. He puts on the Eco Roundtable event, so he's going to be speaking a little bit about that. But before we begin, I want to let people know that are interested in the Haena Fisheries Management, Community Stewardship Program, there's going to be a meeting tonight from 6 to 9 p.m. at Kilauea School Cafeteria that is moved somewhat closer to the rest of the island from Haena, because other fishermen around the island are interested in it. But if you are a fisherman and you have an interest in what is happening in the coast steward management, community-based fisheries management in Haena, tonight, 6 to 9 p.m. at Kilauea School. All right. Gordon, are you there? Are you there, Gordon?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. And Kalasara, are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Okay, so we are going to be talking about a number of different things that have to do with the environment, but Kalasara has just come back from Antarctica. What an amazing trip. So if you're all right with it, Gordon, I'd like to let her share with us about what she experienced down there.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to go to that Haena
meeting
in Kilauea. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to go first. I hope Kalasara doesn't mind.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay. So tell us what you've got going on with the Eco Roundtable.
Okay. About every 6 months, sometimes only once a year, we bring together all the conservation and environmental groups on the island, or
as many as you can get, yeah,
And the concept behind it is for the leaders of the environmental groups to get together and network and share what they're doing, and if they're doing the same thing, I'll just remember the very first Eco Roundtable we did about 10 years ago. There were 3 monk seal protection groups on the island at the time, and a couple of them didn't know about the others, and that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the conservation activists to work together, and the side benefit is the public's invited, so that if there's, it's sort of like a shopping mall, if you will, for volunteers. If you're interested in one of the groups that what they're doing there, they have their literature tables out there, then you can just go up to the person who spoke for the group and say, hey, when's your meeting? I'd like to come. Sounds cool. And it's a great way to get involved in conservation here on Kauai. And lots of cool things have come out of it. And we're looking forward to doing it again on April 19th. That's Tuesday, April 19th, at the Lihue Neighborhood Center.
And that's at 6 o'clock, is that correct?
6 o'clock, yeah.
And it'll go maybe a couple hours, or how long is it typically?
Well, that's a good point. Depending on who shows up, we give 3 to 5 minutes to every conservation group, and usually about 20 groups show up. So it goes for a couple hours usually, and then we don't close up shop right away because the idea is networking. So we stay open. So it's about 6 to 9. We got, you don't have to stay, of course, to the networking part if you don't want to, but a lot of cool things have come out of that. I'll give you an example. Last year, 4 groups got together and formed a coalition to educate the community about the Naval War Games, RIMPAC, Rim of the Pacific War Games. They call themselves Oceans for Peace, and I'm hoping that same thing happens again this meeting.
There's a number of people interested in the reef. When you said that there was 3 different organizations for the seals, I think, well, there's probably at least that many organizations for the reef, because I definitely hear from a lot of different people relative to the reef.
Yes, indeed, and it's a great opportunity to introduce your new group. I know there's a new group, Reef Guardians. There's another group concerned about aquarium fish poaching from the reef. There's lots of new groups that need to introduce themselves to the community.
Yeah.
Or even if you're an individual who has a campaign that you want to start that you've been doing on your own, you might find a group that you can work with as a bigger function, if you will.
Or perhaps if people need support in understanding how to get their voice out, how to be able to be heard or be effective, they might be able to learn from some of the rest
exactly.
of the community.
Yeah.
So do you have an idea of the range of groups? Would that be inclusive of the Friends of Mahalapu or GMO, actually Hawaii Seed, I mean GMO Free? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of different topics that are environmentally related.
They're always there. I mean, the Surfrider Foundation, Koholaleo.
Which is a whale.
The Sierra Club. Mm-hmm. Koholaleo's whale voice. The Sierra Club, Friends of Maha'ulupu, Malama Maha'ulupu. They're always there. GMO Free, Kauai, the Nature Conservancy. Everybody seems to show up. Zero Waste Kauai. It's pretty cool.
Would that also then include Apollo Kauai? How about the people who nurture the Nepali? There's two groups that do really beautiful things on the Nepali and, help restore the trails and the lo'i and the...
They should be there, yeah. They're not on our contact list. So if you have their contacts, you could just send them to me or just tell them to come.
Okay, and
yeah.
So, and then can you give a contact number or something in case somebody is listening right now and they would like to come?
Sure. You can call me at 337-9977 or ecoroundtable@gmail.com.
Okay, ecoroundtable@gmail.com. All right, and so...
Yeah.
That's next Tuesday, and I'm going to be there, by the way. Next Tuesday, Jimmy is going to cover my show, and I'm going to be at the...
Oh, great.
Yeah, I'm going to be there, and I'm going to also be going to the general plan update meeting that is focused on agriculture, and I'm just going to take this little moment to give a shout-out to people who might want to come. That starts 2:30 to 5:30, and that's where the Planning Commission meets, near the Department of Motor Vehicles, because our agriculture choices, this is a visioning meeting, that's important. As most of the environmental groups, are you all participating in the general plan update?
I would say no. I honestly, my read of the situation, I try to keep my finger on the pulse of the environmental community, is they don't pay much attention to
general
plan.
Can I suggest that you do? Because what the general plan update is that's a visioning statement of where we want the island to be moving in the next 20 years and how we want county zoning ordinances and the types of things that affect choices. So whether that is mountain watershed management, all kinds of things, it would be good to have that voice in there for the general plan update.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a lot like voting. A lot of people don't vote because they just don't feel it's worth the effort. And I think a lot of people feel that way about the general plan. They make a great plan and then it's ignored. But yeah, I agree with you, Felicia. If we get the government we deserve, and if we're not involved,
mm-hmm. So this is I'm just kind of encouraging you as a leader to be paying attention to that because
mm-hmm.
I am one of those people who is involved, and it's when there's not enough of us that are showing up,
yeah,
it's not a very big voice.
Exactly.
So usually the people who are showing up are wonderful people who are paid to show up. So when the unpaid people don't show up, they don't
yeah.
get heard, not because people are evil, but because... There, it's not being called to their attention. So thank you so much for calling
in. All right. And Lots of other environmental things are going on. I hope you've got it on your list for the end of the show. But Earth Day is April 24th.
Yes.
You got that?
Well, I forgot to say that I know Malama Kauai is,
yeah,
and I'm actually helping
okay.
with
Ashley
that.
Ashley Colasar is going to be on a panel on Earth Day, a marine panel.
Okay, and so that will be at Kalihiwai Ridge. So if
right.
people between Kilauea and Kalihiwai Valley or towards Princeville,
mm-hmm.
you turn Mauka, you go up about less than half a mile, and you turn left where it says Waikoa, and there'll be little signs and stuff out there. And you go in there, there's a whole range of people. This is not this Sunday, but a week from Sunday.
Right.
I have a booth there. We have a lot of workshops, and Regenerations is doing one. So, yes. So that
great.
Is April 24th, Sunday.
Super. All right. Great. Well, thanks so much, Jen, for KKCR and for informing the community. It's an amazing asset that we have in this community, is our own radio station. Thanks again.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, and so, Colasara, before we get started, I am expecting a call. This might be him, and this is going to be about something to do with the world, in a way. Do I have Ray? Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia, this is Raymond.
Hi, Raymond.
Hi. I'm calling in from the Kauai Alliance for Peace and Social Justice, and we just got a pretty good movie that we're going to be showing three times this month, the latest movie by Michael Moore. He calls it his most dangerous comedy, and the name of the movie is Where to Invade Next. And we're going to be having three areas where we're going to be showing it in toward the end of this month. The first time we're going to be showing it is April 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Hanalei Community Center. The second one will be Thursday, April 28th, 7 p.m. at the Lihui Public Library. And then the third time we're going to be showing it is April the 30th, 6:30 p.m. at the Kaloa Neighborhood Center. And everybody's invited to come and watch the movie and talk story after that.
And so it starts at 6 o'clock, is that right?
Well, the one on the Kaloa Neighborhood Center, that's going to start at 6:30. But the other two, at the Hanalei Community Center or the Halavai near the Green Church, that'll be at 7 o'clock. And then at the Lihui Public Library on April the 28th, that'll be at 7 o'clock as well.
Okay, 7 and 6:30. And that's good because then it will be dark. And so Where to Invade Next, that's a film that is typically premiering in movie theaters. And that's
yes.
by Michael Moore. He made...
Yes.
I want to say Fahrenheit 9/11, and
right.
you know, he did a whole
Bowling for Columbine,
and he did some
Sicko.
Really
yeah.
Sicko.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
this is an opportunity to see the premiere of a film that is typically in the movie theaters, and it's going to
That's
be
right.
here. And so, Where to Invade Next? And he's got a flag. It might sound like it's just about the military, but it isn't. It's about American culture.
Yes.
And maybe we could say Western culture, which really feathers in with our dialogue here about the environment.
Right.
So Where to Invade Next? So I want to thank you for the effort that Kauai Peace and Social Justice has brought another film and effort, and this time to a first-run film that most places
right.
is showing in a major theater.
Right. Well, in Honolulu, they're going to be showing it on May 1st, International Workers' Day, at the Labor Fest function. So they were able to talk with them, too, because Michael Moore wants to get this movie out, especially because of the election period, you know. And, you know, he's a strong supporter of Bernie Sanders and for big money out of politics and, you know, for social justice. This movie will be, it starts off kind of funny, and it says, you know, America engages into a lot of wars for oil, but we really haven't won anything. It's about time that we go to other countries, to names that we can pronounce and learn what they got to offer. And so what happens, he goes to Italy, he goes to France, he goes to even North Africa, to Tunisia, Slovenia, you know, Germany, places like that, and he learns a lot of different things. Like, for example, he learns that in Slovenia they have free college education, and the students there don't have any debt, you know. He goes to Italy, and he finds out that workers share responsibilities with the management in their workplaces, and he also finds out that they have paid maternity leave for the women there. Everybody, it's a universal right in that country, and they have 5 weeks paid vacation. He goes to Germany, and then he finds out that in Germany that they just passed a law that Americans can come over there for free college education at their public universities.
Wow, Germany?
Germany. A lot of interesting things, and it's kind of a funny movie. It's not like in left or right, you know, it's not like a heavy kind of propaganda kind of movie or something like that. But he, you know, he travels to these different countries, and he finds out that that they have a lot of good things there, you know, like universal health care and things like that that Americans can also have, you know. And
yes.
And the Europeans tell him that, you know, we got this idea from America. We heard that you had movements in your country for it, so we decided to have it here. And so, like I said, the movie's going to be free, and we're going to be having a talk story after that. And anybody's welcome to come. And it's, like you said, a premiere. It's a, you know, a big movie, and it's a fun documentary, and everyone is invited.
Okay, and thank you so much. And I know that you are very up on labor. So do you realize today is the Equal Pay Day?
That's right. That's right, because women compared to men is like 76 to every dollar that the man has. A woman only has 76, so this is a big day for that. You know?
Yeah.
And then also another thing, too, is that in Washington, D.C., I wanted to mention, there were over 400 people that were arrested trying to get big money out of politics at the Capitol, you know, in Washington.
And was that today or yesterday?
I believe yesterday, excuse me. But there are demonstrations there all this week. And speaking about labor, also that New York City and California have just passed the $15 an hour, you know, there. So in increments to be coming up yearly to 15. So it's a movement that's beginning to pick up. And this coming Saturday at the Democratic Party Convention here in Lihue, I'm going to be pushing for the $15 an hour minimum. I'm going to raise it there as well, because the Democratic Party here in Hawaii really doesn't want to do anything about it, but I'm going to be raising it, you know, as well, because, you know, you asked me about labor and stuff. So there's a lot of things happening.
So I will be there at the County Democrat Convention on Saturday.
Yes.
And I think that there's a lot of new participants and delegates that's really come in with Bernie Sanders. So I think it's going to be an interesting environment. It is open to all Democrats, but it is, you have to be an officer of some sort to be voting.
Well, yeah, at least a delegate.
A delegate, you know, yeah.
Some kind of officer for a precinct.
Yeah.
I belong to precinct 15-4, which is part of District 15, and I'm a delegate. And what happened was that there were a lot of supporters for Bernie Sanders that got involved in the election process all across America and, you know, here in Hawaii. So, you know, it's going to be there's going to be a lot of you know, new ideas, and it's going to be brought forth within the Democratic Party, because in some respects they've become pretty moribund and stale, you know, and they need some new ideas and some new blood, you know. And we haven't been able to, for example, get very far with the pesticide issue here on Kauai, you know, because of the Democrats and their control over the process, and say, like, for example, with the Department of Agriculture, you know. And here on Kauai, we had a very difficult time trying to get that resolution passed for $15 an hour. There's a lot of things that environmental questions and labor questions and women's rights and stuff that have to be brought up within the Democratic Party, and it's going to be time that they start acting on it.
Yes.
That's why the Bernie campaign is really important.
Yes. Okay. So thank you so much.
Thank you for giving me the time. Oh, yeah. If people want to find out about the movie, they can call this number here. It's 320-3878. That's for more information. 320 3878.
But that's still an 808 number? I don't know that exchange.
Yes, that's an 808 number. I'm sorry, I should be giving it 808.
Okay, because
3878. So thank you for giving me the time, Felicia.
Yes, aloha. Thank you for everything you do, Ray. And I want to just really honor Kauai Alliance for Peace and Social Justice because you guys are working tirelessly to do a lot of very good things. Thank you.
And we want to honor you, too, for all the good work that you do. Okay, you take care. Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Bye.
Okay, so you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Kalasara. I really want to hear what you have to share about your trip. Tell us why you went and what you saw and, you know, just go for it.
why I went, excuse me, was for a whale research project sponsored by the American Cetacean Society and Cheeseman's Ecology Safaris. And honestly, I never had any desire to go to Antarctica. I don't do well in the cold. It was not on my bucket list. But I was at a conference a year and a half ago and saw this presentation about it. And I don't know, it just felt right. So I signed up. And they had... basically, there was 100 people on the ship, and it was a citizen science to help out Ari Freelander, who's doing long-term marine mammal observations to see how the whales are doing with the climate changes that are happening down there.
So you're there. It's our winter, but their summer. Mm-hmm. Was it cold?
It was very cold. It was... warm for them, it was probably 28 average to 35 degrees. It took me about 20 minutes to get enough layers of clothes on just to go outside. So,
did you take all that photography that you, all those pictures? My gosh, they were so beautiful.
Yes, I did.
So, yeah, she's had just some incredible pictures that you have put on Facebook, you know, whatever, but they're very, very beautiful. When you did this trip, was there a focus on guiding people to understand the differences between now and, say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago? Was there a focus on the environmental changes that are occurring, or were you dominantly focused on the whales?
We were dominantly focused on the whales, although there were lots and lots of conversations about the climate changes that are going on. I basically knew nothing when I went down there, and so I sort of learned as I went, and then since I've been home, I've been doing a lot of research on it. There were several groups of people on the ship. There was National Geographic, who was making a film about the trip, which will come out this fall. The Smithsonian Institute was there, NOAA, the American Cetacean Society. There were movie makers. There was a geologist. The boat was basically full of knowledgeable people in the environmental movement and studying what's happening.
When I think of whales, you know, I think of humpback whales. Is that a lot of what you saw, or was it the whole range of whales? And do the southern hemisphere whales both basically go to Antarctica, where the northern hemisphere whales basically go to the Arctic region?
Yeah, correct. Our focus was mostly humpbacks, and we saw minke whales, too. We saw orcas that live down there full-time. But the humpbacks and the minkes were getting ready to migrate north. They go to Tahiti, Australia, up the South American coast, and Tonga, places like that. And it's just the opposite of our whale season, as the seasons are opposite.
Right. So they show up in the summertime in the cold regions, mm-hmm. and eat. And then in the winters, they go closer to the equator where they breed and have children. So they
right.
do something similar. Which ocean were you mostly in? I know there's an Antarctic Ocean, but were you more in the Pacific or the Atlantic or over in the Indian? Like, what were you underneath? What part of the...
We would have been underneath the Pacific. Yes, the Pacific. So we met in Ushuaia, which is the world's southernmost town at the tip of Argentina in Tierra del Fuego, and that's where we boarded the ship. And then we crossed the Drake Passage for 2.5 days, which is the Antarctic Ocean. And then we were on the west side of the Antarctic Peninsula, and we went down that coast below the Antarctic Circle. and then back up.
So best I can tell from reading the Garden Island newspaper and hearing comments and at a minimal level, my own observation, it doesn't seem like we have as many humpback whales here this year. Was there any discussion on the pattern of what's going on with the whales? Are there less whales that are running around? Do they think that something's happened to them, or are they just going to different places, or is at Kauai this year an anomaly and mostly the whale pattern, is it on the rise? Is it stable? Is it showing a bummer?
Well, this year was kind of an unknown about where the whales went, although I did go to Maui earlier in the season, and there were lots there. I don't think Kauai had as many this year, especially North Shore. I did see quite a few off Kealia, and but for some reason they didn't hang out here as much. There's theories, but I haven't heard anything solid.
And you're one of the big things you do, you're a whale person, right?
Yes.
So you go out and you watch for whales every winter?
I try to, yes.
Okay, you try to. And so in the larger whale circle, are most people aren't worried that something has happened to our whales. They just didn't choose to come here.
Not overall. The consensus still is that their population is rising in the North Pacific. Maybe they went more to California because I know the food sources are moving around as the oceans have been warming up. The food's coming further south for the North Pacific. But I haven't heard any official worry about it.
Okay, that's good. I mean, because that has come up on a different show, and it has been suggested that maybe there's activities in the ocean here that aren't that happy for the whales, so they're just going over to the next island.
Well, we do have the military here, so I'm not aware of what specific activities they were doing here this winter, but if they were doing sonar and acoustic exercises, that would definitely possibly, you know, have an impact on where the whales would go.
Okay. So when you have been, when you were down there, something I read about today, and then I appreciated that you gave me a post. I mean, I didn't just read about it today, but Marshall had actually brought it to my attention a little bit more about the earth wobbling because the ice on either end of the earth, both the Arctic and the Antarctic, is melting somewhat. I don't know if you want to weigh in on that, Marshall?
I just heard a brief piece on NPR to that effect.
National Public Radio.
Right, that there always has been a slight wobble, a little bit of a figure eight going on there, but now it's been determined that because there's so much ice melting, I guess the weight is kind of distributed differently and the wobble's more pronounced. So what that is going to do in terms of our weather and ocean currents and whatever kind of animal migrations, what have you, sunrise, sunset, who knows what that could do. It's pretty interesting.
And Calasaro, when you were on this ship with scientists and citizen scientists, was there any discussion of that?
No. I didn't hear about that till after I came back.
So what was the main discussion when you were on this trip? What was the main thing that you guys were seeing that, like, when the scientists are sharing knowledge? Or you could tell me this. What did you learn when you went?
As far as Antarctica goes, I learned that that continent is probably the most important continent on this planet. It's where all the oceans meet, and the land of Antarctica through the glaciers feeds all the oceans.
Can you tell me how that is?
So the glaciers move out from the center of the continent all around towards the ocean, and as they calve or break off, they carry the nutrients from the land out into the sea, and as the icebergs float north, they start to melt, releasing these nutrients, which then generate phytoplankton and other microscopic life, which then feed the krill, which then feed all other life in the oceans.
So, a naive question here. When I think of those places as really frozen, when I think, well, what kind of nutrients could be in that iceberg? Is it mostly minerals?
Probably. I didn't learn the specifics of what exactly is in it. But, yeah, it's carving the minerals in the from the continent.
Okay, and then when I've been looking at different pieces of things that people send me, it speaks about how important it is for the fish in the oceans to be healthy. I've been seeing many, many articles, sorting through all these different articles that speak to some areas have fish depletion of up to 90%. Most places have at least 50% fish depletion. Mm-hmm. We really have a profound drop in the amount of fish that we have in the ocean. And then they say, when there's no fish, then all of a sudden there isn't, you know, that how that impacts the rest of life on the planet. Do you understand that relationship?
Yeah, we didn't talk much about the fishing. We didn't see fishing, but I do know that 300,000 pounds of krill are fished down in Antarctica every year.
For and what?
For, was that oil, the pills that people take?
Like omega-3.
Omega-3, that's right.
Ah.
And there's concern that we're overfishing the krill because the animals down there need the food, especially as the whales are gaining in population. So there's still a lot of study on that, and different countries are trying to figure out if this is okay or not okay, or they can take more or should take less. And so there's not consensus yet on that. But it's being recommended that people not take the omega-3 pills because, first of all, krill is not our natural food source. And second of all, where did the krill get the omega? From the plants they ate. And there are plenty of plants and legumes that humans can eat to also get the omegas that they need.
Yeah, so that's, you know, I think that's a really good point, because very often what we're hearing is it's a company, maybe it's the people who make the omega-3s that are doing the wrong thing. And a lot of times we don't follow the trail back far enough to say it's our everyday behavior. And even some of those capsules that mm-hmm. things are put in, some, a lot of those are made out of shark cartilage and things like that. I mean, at least that's what I've learned, you know, how is the capsule made, what's made. Right. We have to really be conscious.
Well, if we want to take care of this planet, yeah, it's time.
And so how long was this trip?
It was 2.5 weeks.
And did you go on to the continent itself, or did you stay on the boat?
Oh, no, we went on shore.
And so when you went on shore, I think I saw a picture you had of an older building, like a British place that had been abandoned. Is that correct?
Yeah, there were several places abandoned. That particular, the British place had been a survey. They were trying to learn about meteorology and the climate in general down in Antarctica. But the one year, the ice froze so thick that the supply ship couldn't get to them. They were 50 miles away. So the people staying there just abandoned it and hiked out to the ship. And it's sort of a museum now. It's everything's left as it was. The building's still full of food and alcohol and clothing, and you can just check it out. But the whaling down there was really big, and so there's abandoned whaling stations, barrels and supplies that whalers used. There are shipwrecks down there. Antarctica is such a harsh climate that I can see why people wouldn't clean up after themselves. The weather can turn in a moment and go from a beautiful sunny day to downright below freezing, 90-mile-an-hour winds. And but I have to say, I expected to see trash down there, as I've seen trash everywhere I've gone. And because of the way the currents flow out from Antarctica to the north, we saw no plastic trash anywhere.
What about when you were just out in the ocean? Did you see plastic trash in the ocean?
Not at all. It was like a paradise. It was amazing. I was blown away.
Well, that's a wonderful report,
right?
On that one. Did you meet any people who were living down there?
I did not, no.
So,
but I met people who had been down there 30, 40 times.
But were there, when you got on shore, was there, you know, cabs? No, I'm kidding. You know, like you're almost like a cruise ship that's pulling up, right? So we're used to here, you know, you get off and there's something to receive you. Or did you get off and there's nothing there?
Oh, no, we didn't go visit any people.
Okay.
We visited the penguins and the seals and the whales, and that's basically all we saw.
Okay, what about those, I think they're called sea lions. Did you see those?
We didn't see sea lions. We saw fur seals, crab-eater seals, Weddell seals, and leopard seals.
Leopard seals, that's what I was really thinking of.
Yeah, yeah. There weren't very many. We only saw a few. And there weren't as many Weddell seals as were expected. Normally they're much more abundant, and we only saw four or five the whole trip, so that was kind of concerning. I have no idea where they went, and people I talked to also didn't know, so I can't say anything about that. But.
So did the land look largely empty, or were there a lot of penguins and different creatures mm-hmm. around?
Mostly empty, vast. I was so blown away on the scale, the vastness of it, the size of everything, the colors. I just said, wow, the whole trip. And that's all I can say now. I was speechless. There are colonies of penguins and colonies of seals on shore. Like the fur seals would come on shore and hang out together. And the penguins were just ending their nesting season, and they're in their molting season. So they hadn't left the colony yet. But as soon as they're done molting, they're all going to go back to the sea until next breeding season. They won't come back to land. And then there were many crab-eater seals resting on the icebergs.
And so most of the people who were on the ship with you, were they American or were they from all over the
all
world?
All over. Europe, Australia, America.
Mostly English-speaking?
Mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then everybody has a similar story where they're very concerned about the environment and paying attention to the whales, or?
There was 100 people on board. I didn't get a chance to talk to everyone, but everyone there that I did talk to was very aware of the changes that are going on down there. And I think different people were there for their own reasons. Some on vacation, some really to help out. It was sort of kind of an open group, but mostly scientists and environmental people who really care and wanted to see for themselves what's going on.
So you've been back now about 3 weeks?
Two weeks.
2 weeks. And so it takes probably a little while to process what you've learned or what you've seen. And are you coming up with any thoughts of how that might influence your behavior or your messaging, or is it still not that clear to you?
I got loud and clear. I saw how this planet is one living system. And because of Antarctica's connectedness to all the oceans and actually drives the weather patterns for the entire planet, how important it is that we really see that what we do doesn't affect just our little bubble, but it ripples out into other ecosystems. And maybe not right away, but ultimately everything affects everything else. And it's something I knew, but this time I really felt it. I got it.
Yeah, yeah. You say, I hear and I forget, I see and I remember, I do and I understand.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a Chinese proverb that I think is a powerful one. So are you going to be at the Eco Roundtable event next week?
Yeah, I'm planning on it.
And then will you be with a particular group there?
I'm with Kohola Leo, which is Whale Voice. We're a whale group here on Kauai working for their protections and community awareness about who whales really are and how we can better treat the ocean around us. Things like that.
So how can we better treat the ocean around us relative to our whales here?
Well, they don't eat here, so fishing in that respect is not a problem. But we need to be more aware of what the military is doing with their testing around the island. There's growing concern about how it's affecting our reefs. And if our reefs are collapsing, you know, the island itself will deteriorate much more quickly. And will affect, you know, maybe where the whales come and go. We need to definitely pay more attention to our plastic trash. You can go on any beach here, and there's trash on every single beach. You go out on a boat here, there's trash floating in the water. Sometimes these get ingested by the animals that live around here. These are simple things that we could do. And then the harsh chemicals that we put into the ocean. There was a report that just came out about the salmon up in the Northwest have been tested, and because the waters that they live in are very polluted with drugs that people take, both prescription and illegal, and the fish are high.
Right.
Literally, it's in their system, it's in their meat, and then people catch this fish and they're eating it, and so we're recycling the drugs that we're pouring into the water. So anyway, it's something to think about of how we're what we're doing here as well.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I see that the Surfrider organization, they're having a fundraiser, and I'm trying to look when their party is. My kid's playing in that one, so I, of course, I'm extra special going to be there at the OCDC is the name of their band. It's in May. I'm trying to find it. I'll find it in a minute. We have a caller. I'm going to take their call. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Stuff was going on up there in the Gulf of Alaska.
What is going on in the Gulf of Alaska?
Well, it's strange. It was, I think, I'm not quite sure what show, but see, what was going on in the Gulf of Alaska in September, and the thought was, man, we better not have a shortage of whales in Kauai. And I believe it was Ground Zero, Clyde Lewis from Seattle, Washington. I don't think he's on the radio anymore. He used to be on every night, Monday through Friday. And he was saying, I think it's bigger than just the military and the Navy and their sonar. I think they were messing with, I don't know what they were messing with. It's like maybe HARP or something like that. It was something big that got their attention. It was probably something to do with altering maybe the weather even, you know. And so we could probably find out. I heard it in September. I'm sure it's probably on the Internet.
I know that there was some training that was going on, military training up there that was, we had a couple of shows on that where the people in that community was worried about it. I also had, people had sent me some stuff about like a sonar boom.
I wonder if they killed them.
Well, there was Navy war games up in northern Alaska this summer, much like RIMPAC here in Hawaii will be this summer. And
yeah, like they might have blown out their, you know, their radar, the whales. I mean, when they did it here years ago and they had these melonhead whales, I think they came into Hanalei Bay.
Yeah, I was there that day.
The military was over there. And then they brought people over from Oahu and then they took them out to sea.
Hey, I have to say, it was our it was our canoe club that took them out to sea. We made a big lau and Hanalei Canoe Club got those whales back out to sea. It was a wonderful day.
From Honolulu or something.
They came over, and to their credit, they let. And I want to credit Kainoa Chandler Forrest, our canoe club coach. She had the vision and the idea, and the military let her do that, and we were able to bring them out.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. But I mean, up there, do you think they killed the whales?
You know, it's unknown. There was also a red tide up there this last summer, and it's been known that when animals eat this tide or eat food in the tide, it's very, very toxic. And some of the necropsies that were done on some of the whales concluded that they had died from this toxicity.
Well, I'm talking about the ones that just sank, and they never even saw them.
Well, that's the question, though, because whales usually sink when they die. So the ones that washed ashore are a small percentage of the ones that actually died.
But what she did say is that there's an increase in Maui, increase in whales over there, so it might be the Kauai whales just went over to Maui.
Okay. All right. I was just throwing that out there, what we thought in September.
Yeah.
And about the shortage of whales in Kauai, and there you are, guys are talking about. I mean, I notice that I go all over the place in the island. I hardly see any whales. And I was really kind of shocked. And then you guys are talking.
They seem to have left early this year, too.
Yeah, somehow they weren't here as much this year.
I didn't even see half as many as usual. And like, I swam at Poipu today, and yesterday, last week, I swam at Te Kaha, you know, I swim at Anini, I swim, you know, the hideaways. So I swim all over, and I didn't see not even half. I was like, wow, where are the whales?
Well, thank you for calling in and sharing
all right,
that.
Thanks for taking it. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. I did have somebody ask me to repeat when and where the Michael Moore film Where to Invade Next is going to be playing, so I will. April 22nd, that's a Friday at 7 p.m., April 22nd in Hanalei at the community center there, also known as Hale Halawai Ohanalei. Then on Thursday, April 28th at 7 p.m. at the Lihue Public Library on Hardy Street. And then on Saturday, April 30th at 6:30 p.m. at the Kaloa Neighborhood Center. So Where to Invade Next, April 22nd, 28th, and 30th. Hanalei, Lihue, Kaloa. So that was that piece. I had been, I posted it here, sent, I don't know if you two saw it, Marshall and Kalasara, a little a clip of a lot of unusual events that happened in the weather on Kauai. I'm not on Kauai, on the world, like ice storms and incredible flooding in Saudi Arabia and on the Arabian Peninsula and all these, you know,
and the volcanoes.
The volcanoes
erupting.
And, you know, probably every month, always, there's a lot of incredible things. And then when we have the internet, we're able to see it and know that there's a lot happening. But really, and a lot of intense and big, huge openings of the earth. I guess they call those sinkholes. We've had them on Kauai before. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Aloha. I'm concerned about certain things, but I have a question. I just stepped in on this, just turned on the radio and listened to you about the whales here in the Hawaiian Islands. But I believe that, well, I heard that they migrate at the same time as, you know, the humpbacks. They go to like the Gulf of Mexico, along the California coast, that area. Also, Japan, northern Japan during the our whale season during our wintertime.
Yes.
In the northern hemisphere and also Hawaii. And then I also heard that they switch migrations, too. Some of them go to Japan, some of them switch to California.
Yes.
And they recorded that. That would be my explanation. Maybe they decided to go take a vacation somewhere else, have the baby somewhere else.
Well, I think there's some reality of that. I know
I have
watched that over the years. They'll say they can tell sometimes when whales that typically come here might go over to Mexico instead of here.
Well, I was a boat captain, and I did a lot of whale watching and also seen just dolphins that I've seen for over 25 years when I was doing it, because from the identification of their fins and so forth and markings. But what was interesting while I was doing all my years doing that was that I saw a humpback whale. I mean, a gray whale. I saw a gray whale here in the Hawaiian waters, and that was amazing. I'd never seen a gray whale in the Hawaiian waters. And one of my friends said, "Oh, it looks sick." And I go, "No, that's a gray whale. They're gray. That's what they look like." I thought it was a sick humpback. And I just thought I'd just bring that to you that, you know, as species, we sometimes we accidentally go to places, just like we had, you know, eagles come here or ospreys or things of that nature. So I think I just feel like we're still young as far as learning in the universe on this earth. You know, we're still learning about life, and it's nice that we have concerns, but, you know, as a species, as humans, I think we're making the earth wobble by the way we are. We, you know, myself, I just find myself just manifesting so much stuff within a lifetime. It's like, God, I'm making my making my life wobble. So that's just my analogy of what's going on. You know, we're so concerned about the environment. Well, you know, we keep on co-creating so much stuff and making more people. It's like, where we're going to put all this stuff, you know, and it's amazing. It's amazing that, you know,
how
it is.
I appreciate that input, and I know that when I'm listening to the last caller, I appreciated all of his concerns, and
sure.
I want to make sure that I'm not on KKCR causing the inference to say that the whales were killed just because they weren't here. You know, they weren't here, that doesn't mean they died.
Right.
So
well,
I want to be very careful that, you know, that I'm not...
I agree.
That's just an idea.
I feel like it's amazing that, you know, she was talking about the Weddell seal, and then you asked her about the leopard seals, and she didn't see very many of them. And then it's like, here on Kauai, you can see a monk seal almost every day, and it, depending on where you're at on the island. And then there's people concerned about, you know, they're not from here. The monk seals aren't from here. Well, they live on the planet, and there's only 1,100 of them left and also declining. I mean, how would you feel as a species if it was like that? And, you know, I mean, it's just, we're so ignorant as humans sometimes, you know, even myself. I'm still trying to educate myself, so that's the way I look at it. And I just think that we should deal with things with more concern and also, you know, with more love instead of all this greed and just the way it is. But I just want to say thank you so much for the great show. I really appreciate KKCR.
Okay. I appreciate your call.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Aloha.
So when we're talking about the local environment, and it was brought up in, I think, the call before last, or maybe I brought it up, the Surfrider. The Surfrider talks are going to happen. Dr. Carl Berg was on last week's show, and he's going to be going around the island this Friday. He's in Lee. Thursday the 14th, he's going to be in Lihue talking about these water tests that they're doing in the streams. There's really a lot of
bacteria
in the streams, some far worse than others. You know, I'm happy to see the streams that I touch and I'm in and stuff like that aren't as bad as some of the others, but we all have to care about what's going on in each other's streams. And so he is going to be giving a talk in Lihue on the 14th, in Hanapepe on the 15th, and in Princeville on the 20th. So I will be looking up in a break here of exactly where those talks are happening. But the party that I mentioned is on May 7th. So that's a Saturday from 6 to 10 p.m. And OCDC, my favorite band, because it's my kid. But they're good. They're there, and that's at the now Willy Willy Yacht Club. So a lot's happening with them, and I think it's really important that we learn to appreciate these organizations that go around and do this tireless work. One of the things they do that's so important is they pick up the rubbish off the beach, the marine rubbish, and that is an incredibly large task. And we don't want to have all those nets and things out there hurting our turtles and whales and mammals and everything else.
And they take many tons of nets off our beaches every year, and we're just a small island. Imagine what all the other islands, how much is out there?
I know my students, we went and we were cleaning one up off Moloa Beach, and pretty soon the kids were just grabbing the people who were on vacation and making them do it. And fortunately, I think it was the DLNR, they brought a big flatbed truck down there, and we had one of the wealthy people paid to put it in a container, and then we learned that it got shipped to Oahu, and then it got incinerated there, which is going to be making dioxins, but we couldn't put it in the landfill. It was actually a really great learning pathway. We had gone to the lighthouse, and what we were doing is we were dissecting these, they call them boluses, like the little albatross. They throw things up, and then so you cut it apart, and we were looking how much was natural and how much was plastic pieces that they got like a second stomach. So we learned about how much plastic there was. So then we learned about the marine debris. So then we thought, okay, well, let's make our next field trip, go clean up this piece of marine debris. And that was no small feat. It was a huge effort. And then we realized we can't even throw it away here. Because we would, you know, if we took all that marine debris and put it in the landfill, well, there's no place for it. So then, okay, well, what are we going to do with it? Well, it's a good person paid for it to ship it over to Oahu. But then we go, well, then what do they do with it over there? Well, then they burn it. you know, in some kind of clean incinerator, but you're still burning plastics.
Right.
So we realized just, you know, how profound and related all these things were. So that's a big deal. So you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall. And Kala Sara is our guest in here, and we are talking about the environment. And we're going to hear from our underwriters. These are really great people and organizations that help programs like this stay on the air. And we'll, our call number is 826-7771. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We have a caller. Aloha, you are on the air.
I called probably just about the right time. You're talking about Carl Berg and the water test and that.
Yes.
Last time you and I talked, I was concerned about the dumping of the septic tank effluent and the septic tanks and all kinds of porta potties and where it's going, if it's not going into the ground here on the island. And I didn't know what was going on, but since then I researched it and I found out there's these things called, injection wells.
Yes.
And it's where they dump it and pump it into the ground. And not just waste, but industrial chemicals and, it's all going along in the main branch too. But on Kauai, we've got 90 of them.
90 and injection wells?
90 injection wells on Kauai, yes.
Marshall, can you look that up on the internet and see if we see
that? Yeah, Oahu's got 160 of them over there. And it's a controversy in the mainland. The scientists originally were thinking that, oh, they'll never move out of the aquifers or into the landmass where they're pumping it. But as it turns out, there's a lot of leakage. It's very similar to the fracking that's going on in the mainland where they're dumping their chemicals back into the earth after they're done with that area. And they're leaking into aquifers and all over the place. So it's become a big controversy on the internet now. ProPublica put out a paper on it just recently with quotes from the Environmental Protection Agency and a lot of the scientists there. And they're saying that the people who say that there's no problem with it, don't know what they're talking about, that these are leaking. I mentioned it on the radio the other day, and I had somebody else come on after me, and he was a knowledgeable individual, and he's saying that Kauai is one of the most, permeates the soil, permeates it, perks most places anyway, better than anywhere else in the world. And anything you put on top of or into the ground will eventually get to the sea. And that got me concerned, and it was only 10 days ago or something I started reading about it, but there are maps of Kauai where these injection wells are.
Can you get one?
Right above the Mahalapu area, and that could be a big concern. I don't remember hearing Carl Berg or those guys talking about it, or even Bridget Hammerquist talking about it either over there, but it seems that very likely these are leaking. And that could be a big addition to where the bacteria is coming into the streams over there. It is a responsibility of the Department of Health to inspect these. They say regularly, but some of them are on a 5-year schedule for when they inspect them. And essentially, it's a pipe that goes into the ground, pipe and cement. But at the end of the pipe, it just dissipates into the land mass, and it's supposed to be contained in that area. Though nobody knows what's happened.
Well, I have spoken with what was called a pipe man, a kupuna who did that work, and I know that there are some injection wells out there in the Mahalapu area. In fact, I'm glad you're reminding me of this, because I should connect him with Carl Berg and Bridget. That's he's a very sharp man, and I think that is a more of an older technology to do. I think.
Oh, it's very common now. It's being used all the time.
But they're still creating. I want to give a shout out right now to the Kilauea Neighborhood Association on this topic that you're talking about. Because last Tuesday when I went to the meeting there, this is a really excellent example of environmental citizen activism. And it was brought up there that there are 600 cesspools in the plateau and the houses in the Kilauea area. And, you know, to change it over to septic, which is about $15,000 to $20,000, and it's going to be really difficult for some people. Because their lot size isn't big enough to put the leach field. That when they do the math on that, that's about $9 million. So the citizen idea is, hey, maybe let's put together an agreement where people will pay that $15,000 into a fund, and when we get enough people willing and ready to put that money in, that would have about $9 million towards making a small sewer system. And then if the county or the state or developers were able to add to that, but that's a better way than to be making either the county or the state or a developer have to pay for the whole thing. You know, so we might be able to do that.
It's a huge problem, of course, dealing with all this waste. There's no question about that. Even if we realize that that's where a big source of the pollution is coming from, so it's not just Mahalapu, but it's Hanalei as well, and all over the island, but we still have the problem of what to do with it, even if we realize that that's where a good percentage of it is coming from, which is what I think the situation
is. So we have to be, composting it down. So, you know, finding another way to be managing it, but it's still difficult. I agree. And when we know, 100 or 500 years ago, there were almost as many people on the island that are now here. Somehow it worked out, and my guess is they were pooping also. So, it's just like what all we actually put in there beyond just the waste. So thank you so much for calling that in.
And it's not just human waste that is a problem. It's industrial waste.
Yeah, that's what I was meaning.
Chemicals in the mainland, it's radioactive waste is going into the ground. I imagine that's where DDT and any kind of a chemical waste that was left over on Kauai was going as well, and eventually it will leach down into the ocean. And some of the wells are old enough where there have been new laws that have been enacted to deal with the problem of them leaking, because it's known that they're leaking. But some of them are grandfathered in, and they're still using them. To close them down would be a big threat to the industries right now, the petroleum industry and the sewage people anyway, and to everybody else, what we're going to do with it. So it seems like there's lobbies that are very strong against it, and a lot of scientists that are saying fairly similar to what the GMO people are saying about glyphosate, is that, no, this has been tested so many times, and it's perfectly safe. There's no problem with it at all. But now we're finding out that that's not the truth. And that seems to be what's happening with the injection wells on Kauai. Not just Kauai, but in the mainland, it's a huge controversy.
Yeah, so there's these very big issues, and it also costs a lot of money to correct it. And where does that money come from? So you are bringing up big issues about a holistic change that we need to make, and it's stuff that's, part of the good conversation. So I appreciate your call.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Aloha, you're on the air. Aloha, Journey?
Hello.
Hi, thank you for calling in, and I want to kind of just tell the callers, like, I was expecting your call. Journey, you've been in the show here before.
Yeah.
So just to give people an idea, you are part of the youth group called Earth Guardians that is filing a lawsuit against the federal government for basically impacting the future of humanity. Future generations are being impacted by present and past decisions. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about this lawsuit.
Last fall, myself and Tony Utter used to run the United States with our lawyers. Our Children's Trust filed a lawsuit against the federal government on behalf of my generation and future generations over climate change. Our position is that climate change is a violation to our constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property, and that climate change violates the public trust doctrine to protect our natural resources for future generations. Over 600 oil companies filed to intervene in this case this January. They claim that our lawsuit is a direct threat to their global business and economy because we're asking for a dramatic reduction in carbon emissions and action to turn away from new fossil fuel development.
So that's a very big, big step, and I think it is what one might almost call a bellwether lawsuit. This is a real change in direction, and it makes a lot of sense because what is happening now is a take from the future. And the last caller was talking even about injection wells, including the energy industry that injects toxic waste, or when there's fracking and things like that, it damages the water table. So, so many of these issues, like if you guys win this lawsuit, that will be hugely changing on everything, because so far, the future is not something that is owed to the next generation. That's essentially the statement that you're making, correct?
Yeah.
So this went to court. I mean, the judge, this is in federal court in Oregon, right?
Yeah.
And so the federal judge, my understanding from what I've read, and I saw it even on CNN, that it basically, you had intervener status from many of these energy companies. Do you know how many energy companies jumped in on that lawsuit to intervene, to ask the federal courts to dismiss it? Do you happen to know that, how many there were?
100.
How many?
100.
100?
600.
600 interview. Wow. Okay. So this was something that caused them to say, oh, we do not want this to happen. Dismiss this case. And what was the decision of the judge?
The decision of the judge wasn't definite at the time. It was just a hearing. But just recently,
He moved that the case be held, yes. So that's saying that you have standing, which means this is a legitimate question to be asking. That's powerful. Yeah. And I see that you have, when I look at these pictures that are on the press, did you just go somewhere, or is this when you were there at the beginning of the court going to trial? There's all this.
What do you mean?
There's pictures that came out even just today and yesterday. That's the group of you, 21 activists, youth activists together, standing there like on court steps. Were those pictures kind of used from when you were there a couple months ago, or did you go again?
Yeah, that was.
That was a couple months ago. Well, you just went to Colorado for something. What did you go there for?
I recently went to Colorado for a leadership retreat with Rise Global Youth Council, basically planning to try to teach everyone there in the council to try and hold their own trainings and retreats themselves. Create and train other young youth to become leaders in the community.
And I can't say the name of your friend that is often speaking. He was at the Bioneers Conference. How do you say his name? He is often the strongest voice for your group. What is his name?
I believe it's Shutuska.
Shutuska, yes, that's correct. He is quite a speaker, too. He went to France to the Climate Change Conference, and I've seen him at the UN in New York, and I know you and him went to Washington, D.C., correct?
I'm not sure. I only went to Washington, D.C. for a Native youth gathering.
A Native youth gathering? Okay. And you've been doing a lot of really wonderful things. I was really, really pleased with your speaking that you did at the Kauai Performing Arts Center. You made a very, very compelling speech there. So, do you know when this is going to be going to court?
No, they haven't given us that information yet.
Have you noticed that in June there is going to be what they're calling a trifecta of court cases? This is, it will be in federal court, because you were very active with Ordinance 960 or Bill 2491 about the pesticide issue. They're going to be hearing at the same time Kauai's lawsuit against Syngenta and the other companies, Dow, Pioneer, for not allowing 960 to happen. There's a lawsuit about that. And then Maui has their moratorium that was struck down. And then Hawaii Island had said they just didn't really want to open the door to the genetically modified organism type of seed things because they're seeing the challenges that are happening on the other islands. So each one of these had a lawsuit by the industry against them. The last judge had ruled against every one of those counties, but then the federal courts have taken the appeal, which is similar to when they didn't dismiss your case. By taking the appeal, they're saying, you know what? Each of these counties has a legitimate reason to say that the judgment was not correct, that there was something wrong in the way that that case was looked at. So all three of them are going to court in June, and I'm going to try and go over for them. Are you thinking about going?
I might go.
You know, I think it might be a value for you. You've been observing so many things, so I want to put that in your head that you might learn a lot from going over there for that. So,
yeah,
because you've been a very, very strong speaker. And, you know, really prepared when you come before the county council. So I appreciate your efforts on those, too. So any final thoughts?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, well, thank you very much for all that you're doing and what you're a part of.
Thank you.
We're all very proud of you.
Yeah, it's whether you realize it or not, it's a piece of history. And whether this court case wins or not, it's a big step. It's a big transition for them to start to hold big industry accountable. And when it is holding big industry accountable, really it holds this whole generation accountable. These things wouldn't be big industry if we weren't all overusing the product that they offer. So it's a big change. So thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you for letting me come in.
Yeah. We'll be talking to you again. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Aloha. So have you been following that one, Kalasara?
I have, here and there. I did hear about the ruling the other day.
Yeah, this is really, you know, quite a big issue, and we will be following that. And it will have really huge impact. Just you know, like I'm trying to think of something that is that impacting. I would say something of that scale is like when they decided to have the 40-hour work week. It used to be that they could work people 7 days a week, and we had almost indentured servitude, and that 40-hour work week really changed everything. It was a very, very large shift. And this is something of that kind
of scale. It could be a game changer, depending on how far it goes and what the consequences are.
Yeah, very big. And when we took a couple, before we took a couple calls back, I was commenting on this compilation video that somebody put on with these sinkholes and really incredibly unusual weather phenomena, like the kind of scale of flooding and things like that have happened in the off season. And like they had these pictures of big, huge chunks of ice, very large chunks of ice falling from the sky, and you think,
what was that?
I mean, it's like the size of a coconut or something, or bigger, you know, and in a number of different countries and doing a lot of damage. It didn't seem like it killed anybody, thank goodness. But when we see shifts, like especially I would think with sinkholes, so we are constantly pumping things out of the ground that we didn't used to. When we're pumping water out of the ground, when we're pumping oil out of the ground, that's got to be affecting the layers of the rock strata underneath. So that was that. I have another announcement. I was looking for an announcement on exactly when and where Carl Berg's talks are, but I did find that the Kamalani organization, for their Earth Day, they are having a community work day in Lydgate Park. It is this Saturday at 7:30 a.m. Those typically are very fun. It's where they fix up all that play apparatus, and it's going to go to lunch. You know, and I think it looks like people are going to be meeting in the main pavilion. So that's another good, positive element that's happening. GoFarm, we might be hearing from GoFarm. We might get a call in from him. But this April 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. At the farm there at Kauai Community College, they're going to be having a big party. I think they call that Farm Curious or something like that. They got a good thing so people can learn about the Go Farm program. And that's Eric Hansen, and he does a great job. Okay, I struck it. Here we are. This is the thing for Carl Berg's. Thursday the 14th in Lihue Library at 6 p.m. At every one of these, it is 6 p.m. So Thursday the 14th is Lihue Library. Friday the 15th, Hanapepe Library. Wednesday the 20th, Princeville Library. So that's great. And also this Saturday, Hanalei School is having their Starry Nights event. That's a fundraiser. I can't say how much it costs. It's they've got a dinner and a great environment, and that would be with G Love and Donovan Frankenreiter playing the music there, and that's a good one.
A note on CERT training, Felicia, for anyone who's still wanting to sign up to be trained as a member of CERT on Kauai. The Lihue classes were postponed due to insufficient enrollment. So if anyone would like to still get in line for that when it does happen, you can email John Cornell at kfdcert@kauai.gov or give him a call at 808-645-0661.
CERT, Community Emergency Response Training.
That's right.
That's right. So getting people together to really learn how to be able to handle that. So, and people can call in at 826-7771. All right. I want to speak for a moment about the Democratic Convention. He's been correcting me. I say Democrat. It's Democratic. There's so much going on in understanding what happens in the electoral system with these primaries and caucuses and when it's something like a presidential preference poll, because I think both Donald Trump's run and Bernie Sanders' run has really worked to show the community, the world, the country really, of how it is not really one vote, one that matters. It is kind of a private club that decides who is going to be the president, or at least the presidential nominee. So I think that that's been a little bit shocking and disappointing. When Al Gore ran, we saw how the Electoral College was, and it wasn't really just the vote. But with this primary time when we're deciding who is from each party, you know, we have this thing about the superdelegates. So that is, I don't know. What do you think? Have you been following it?
Yeah, I was glad to get away from it for a few weeks. It's overwhelmingly everywhere. It's okay. I mean, it's important, but I've learned a lot. I don't know why these superdelegates even exist. Initially, our country was put together to vote by the people, for the people. The people voted. That's enough.
Well,
need to be all these other delegate layers.
I can answer that one. When our country was formed, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have electricity, so it was a horse ride away. And that might be take a week to get from, you know, Georgia up to New York or Philadelphia.
Sure.
So they would have to send a delegate. And people lived maybe their whole lives for generations in the state, the new state that was there. So they had a long ride away. So they had to send, you know, just a few people up, and they would pick the amount, and it made a lot of sense to have the Electoral College. But now, when people move all over the place, and it isn't necessarily super regional, it should just be a straight vote count, you know, that would be something. I guess that why they have kept it is they feel like it would disadvantage the smaller population states.
Well, but what we're finding is these superdelegates don't really care what the population's voting. They're going to vote their own way anyway. And I understand that when they're voting as a person, they can vote as they want to. But shouldn't they be legally required to vote as the population has voted?
That's right.
That's what's not okay.
So the regular delegates, they have to, although when you go there, like I am going to go to the state convention, and that's May 28th and 29th. It'll be my first time to go to a state convention. It'll be my first time to go to a county convention. I am a local delegate. I am a delegate from Kilauea. And they go there, and what I've learned is at the state, the delegates that are from the different communities, then they vote for a delegate to go to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. It'll be Philadelphia for the Democratic one. There'll be a different one for the Republican. But so it is a vote that, so people basically run to be a delegate, and then you have to hope that they're going to stay with where they're at. So that's the regular delegates. And it's supposed to be that there's a split that they're committed to, so many to represent Bernie Sanders, so many to represent Hillary Clinton. And then the superdelegates, that really hasn't been in the rules for a long time. That came up when they didn't like what the people were coming up with. So this, Marshall knows better than I do. What presidential election brought the superdelegates out?
1980.
Really?
Not
yes.
Recent.
1980, I knew it was recent, but that was Reagan and Carter.
Yes. Well, it was established, the Democratic Party established a delegate system in 1980, it was because of the 1972 defeat.
Okay, so they were going, all right, we have to adapt and make some changes, and so they came up with the superdelegate idea. And then something that's been a little bit rough is they'll go, okay, well, let's have more superdelegates. I saw even some clip, it was Donald Trump actually commiserating with Bernie Sanders when he saw that even though he won Wyoming, Hillary's getting the equal level of delegates, and it was a pretty full win. And, you know, he was going, I don't even like the guy, but I'm identifying with him that, you know, this isn't fair. So there's all these arcane party rules. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, aloha, good afternoon. I just have been listening to your show and just wanted to chime in on a couple things here, if I may.
Great, great. And hopefully you know more about them than I do. I like to talk to my listeners.
I'll tell you, we're all learning.
Yes.
But I just wanted to go back to the conversation that you folks were having about whales and marine mammals in general. And if you folks all remember, folks that live on Kauai, that there was an article in the Garden Island newspaper which described how the military had permits to kill thousands of marine mammals. So these RIMPAC war games have been being played between the Hawaiian Islands and California for the last two summers, with 20 nations playing extensive war games in our waters. And, of course, that would have to affect the ecosystem. And I hadn't heard anybody bring that up. I know that we have discussed the military in this conversation, but I also just wanted to bring that up specifically because it is something that can be researched, and the Garden Island newspaper can also be referenced.
Yes.
In regard to that. So I just want to bring that up. Also, Fukushima has not been mentioned in this conversation, which is obviously an ongoing dangerous situation that affects the oceans throughout the world. And actually very little is known about that because that's all hush-hush in Japan about talking about Fukushima. As a matter of fact, it's actually illegal for them to say the word leak in Japan or even print the word. So that's all been held under wraps. So there's a lot going on with the oceans. Also, just in reference to the conversation that that you folks have been having today, I just really want to remind all ears, especially the folks that are working for the county and the state, that it is a federal violation to spray Roundup anywhere near water or on water. And our county and our state continue to do this again and again. I have pursued this for many years on Kauai, and I'm reminding everyone that you need to turn your bottle of Roundup over, and you need to take a look at the back of the Roundup, and you have to remember that it is a federal violation. And when you spray Roundup near water, in ditches that turn to water, or anywhere that water is going to go, you're breaking federal law. And granted, we are an occupied kingdom, so everything is quite askew, but what I think that turns out ultimately is to turn into war crimes. So I'm just really reminding everyone to be extremely aware of Roundup. Don't use Roundup. Don't buy Roundup. We need to influence our county and state individuals and our neighbors to be highly aware of these toxic poisons, because they are a huge part of the problems that have been addressed in part in this conversation. So just really want to say that. And there's just one more thing that I want to share, and it's slightly thrown off topic, but it's just something that I've been hearing throughout the years on Kauai, and that is that Kauai residents continue, not just residents, but visitors, continue to misuse place names. And we continue to say names that are not proper, and it's just not correct. Three of the biggest ones that I just really want our community to reflect upon are Poipu, which is not Toipu. It's actually Poipu. That's the correct way to say it. P-O with an Okina. P-O with a Macron, Okina I-P-U. So that word is Poipu. That's the correct way to say that. And we continue to say that improperly. We teach others to say that improperly. And it's really not a proper use of the Hawaiian language. Another one that I continuously hear is Mahalapu. Actually, that is not proper. It's actually Maha'ulepu with an accent on the U. And it's important for people, especially on the radio, and I'm not just talking about KKCR, but I'm talking about advertisements that I hear on the radio, where we continually misuse this language, that it is our responsibility to use it correctly, especially when we live here. And the other one is Pakala, which you will continually hear people say it is Pakala, but actually it is Pakala. And those are three that we just all really need to say correctly. And so I know that's just a little bit to throw into this conversation here, but it is so very important for us to not say mahalapu. Because
so,
it isn't mahalapu.
And that's one that I kind of struggle with. I really struggle because I've learned it wrong for so long. Maha ulepu.
It's maha ulepu with the accent on the U. The makron is on the U. And so you know what it is. We all just have to pay a little bit more attention. Take a look at the word. Where is the okina and where is the makron?
I would like to actually address a few of the things that you've said, if you're all right with that. Just because it's important to me that we have really accurate information out there. In the even recent past, I've had the commander of the base of Pacific Missile Range Facility on the show twice. He's been here.
Yeah, I've heard that show.
So he has been very much speaking about how for people to respond to the environmental impact statement for what's called the Hawaii Southern California Testing and Training. And then we had a call in from when they do the, the community outreach, and I believe the number was 1.6 million takes is what the permit is for. It's a very, very large number, and so a take doesn't necessarily mean a killing. It means an impact, which could be anywhere from a killing to, a disturbance. So we definitely do put a focus on that. I also had the... one of the main consultants for the cleanup of Fukushima on the show, and he had been the lead engineer for the Daiichi power plant for 15 years before the tidal wave and the earthquake. And so, you know, he really straight up said that the whole world needs to come together to help them, and they are making progress. But it is a very, very difficult thing for them to undertake. And he's a Chinese national, but he blamed Japan for being too proud to really ask for the help. I've been saying, why don't we do a RIMPAC exercise that is actually, works on Fukushima or works on the plastic in the ocean, you know? And they say, okay, well, you know, put that up to the command, you know, meaning that needs to go to our senators and stuff. But we really could take an action like that as citizens, saying instead of a military exercise, why don't we try and create that? I think that's a movement that's worth really putting that out there, because it can almost seem like what I would consider a trade show for the arms dealers for what happens. But it is, you know, the military, they work for the government. The government gives them this task. I've had Stu Burley on, who it was him who started RIMPAC, and his discussion of why he felt that that was important. So we actually do work real hard to get that in there. And then on the pronunciation of the names, at KKCR, we are definitely asked and tried to train to speak the words right. We have Sandy Swift in the morning who does a really excellent job with that.
Yes.
And I have plenty of Kupuna friends who make the comment that the way people have relearned the Hawaiian language in college is different than what they remember, and that the okinas and the, what's the little bar called again?
The makron.
The makron, that wasn't ever in there, you know. So that's something that people trying to remember what it was like have put in there. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when I'll say Kauai, my kapuna friends will roll their eyes at me and they will say, it's Kauai. Mm-hmm. You know, it's young people who have decided it's Kauai. So what I do as... somebody who wasn't born here, who's not a native speaker, I simply do my best, and I stay humble, and I try not to be somebody who tells others, not necessarily you, but like I'm not going to tell the Hawaiian people how to say the words, because I'm just learning. So I appreciate that you're correcting me or anybody out there,
Actually, not necessarily you, Felicia. Actually, I really hear it a lot on the radio in almost every advertisement that I hear. And the thing that I understand in my studies over the years with the Hawaiian language and what I learn every time I'm with my kumu is that it is important for us to learn the language and understand enough to get the place names correct, because when we say them wrong, that place actually loses its significance. There are specific rules, and yes, we are all doing our best without a doubt. And what my suggestion is that we can all do it better, and we should definitely be aware of that because it is our responsibility. And I've been thinking about this for many years, wanting to share this with the community. And it's not just those three words. There are many different words. But if you actually take the time to look at the word or sound it out, it's not really that difficult. You just have to take the effort. And then when we begin to say it correctly, and I do get your point about what you said, it really honors the place that we live and we visit. And I think that that's very important. So I just wanted to just bring that in.
Okay. I appreciate that. And then adding or strengthening in your comment there, I know something that I work very hard to do is to be reclaiming the names of the beaches. That
yes.
is Makua, not tunnels. It is Kauapea, not secrets. It's Lepa'uli, not Larson's.
Larson's, exactly.
And when we do that, and when you look at these names, they're pretty amazing. You know, you see these 15-syllable names. I can't remember the one that I'm trying to think of that is part of Kauapea, but it means something, and I learned this from Auntie Linda Sproat.
Mm-hmm.
That little point means something like safe place to land to the left of the rock that looks like a pig in the springtime, you know. And so when they have these incredible names, it's a important teaching. And when you look at all these nuanced little points along the ridge lines, they often are navigational. It's like they'll say this point that needs to be lined up with that point in order to get through the opening in the reef to land safely, you know. So, like, not even truncating them to two syllables. You know, the more that we cause our minds to think that way, and the most beautiful part of it is it tells us how much we have basically allowed in our own brains to atrophy. The stars are named like that. The little pukas out on the reef are named like that. And they tell you where fresh water is coming out, where the right place to get this fish is. The plants are named something that has to do with the fish, because you use that plant when you go out to fish and why you build an ahu out in the water. And really, when you look at our education system and it's not integrated into that, that is a lack of survival. And I'm getting passionate about this right now because, you know, when one generation isn't able to pass that on to their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren, you have that interruption of the generational crossover. We lose all of history, in a way, in locally grown local knowledge. And that
you
would be true for anywhere in the world.
Step on you just illustrated my point perfectly, Felicia. And I just want to say that we so very much appreciate not only KKCR, but everything that you do for our community. And I just want to mahalo you so much for your time today. And thank you for all of the good works from everyone. Just some things to think about. Really appreciate it, Felicia.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, it's the listeners, and I'm going to give a shout-out to Kumu K. Howe, who is somebody who has probably, for me, given me the hardest lesson, or in a positive way, the most strident lesson on the importance of the place names. So
mine too. My Kumu as well, Felicia. I'm definitely listening carefully and studying a lot.
And Marshall did look up this website relative to the RIMPAC exercises.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so, Marshall, what I was wanting you to find there is the email address for people to be putting in concerns or questions. And what is the website? Can you tell us the name of the website so people could go and look and that they could input? And even though it's kind of past the time, I have stayed in communication last time, even a couple of days ago, with Commander Bruce Hay. And I would say he does genuinely actually care to hear. He's reaching out. He's not you know, saying talk to the hand and not the face or whatever, you know. I mean, he's he is definitely reaching out. So Marshall is looking at that. Do you see, what's the name of the website?
It is HSTTEIS.com.
So that means Hawaii, Southern California without the C, testing and training, environmental impact statement.com.
Training and testing.
Appreciate that. Also, just for anyone who's interested, if they want to trace that Garden Island newspaper that talks about the military permitting, that, I believe that was last summer that they ran that article. I think I have that article. I just don't have it in front of me. So, again, I know that you're getting close to the end of the show, so I definitely appreciate your time. And we'll just continue to work together to create proactive solutions to the situation that we all share.
Okay, and you can post that article either on my Facebook page or KKCR. Thank you so much.
Mahalo nui. Aloha.
Mahalo nui. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei K-A-Q-A Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Jazz with John is coming up. We have another caller. Aloha. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. Aloha, Kauai.
Oh, this is
really
my
enjoying.
Eric.
Hi. Aloha. Hi. I was trying to call in earlier, but I got all busy on the farm working on some irrigation issues. Beautiful show you're having today, and I just wanted to inform Kauai about the exciting opportunities for those who are interested in becoming a farmer or more want to solidify their skill sets, that we have an amazing opportunity coming up here on Kauai to be part of the next Go Farm Hawaii program here on Kauai. Go Farm is a hands-on experience for about 6 months and learning sustainable farming and the management practices of that. Next Wednesday, April 20th, we're going to have a free information session down at Kauai Community College where those who are interested in learning more about the our farm training program can hear from some successful farmers on island, as well as previous students and other government agencies on island that assist farmers. And we will also be providing sign-up sheets for those who are interested in being involved in the program at that date on April 20th. So I would like to put that out there as an open invitation for those who are interested in learning more about farming and all the resources available to them to please come down and check out our Ag Curious Seminar.
Ag Curious Seminar, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, Eric, are you going to be at the Kauai Farmers Union meeting tomorrow night, April 13th?
Absolutely.
That would be 6 o'clock, and people could bring, most people bring kind of potluck-style Kauai-grown food, and so you'll be at that?
Yes, I will be at that. I will be at that as well, so if anyone has any questions, come down as well to the Hawaii Farmers Union meeting down in Alohola at the
neighborhood center. Yep. And then you also going to on the 19th at the county buildings there, they're having the general plan update for agriculture. I'm hoping that I will see some young faces there, because I would really like to see it dispelling the myth that all farmers or the average farmer is 65 years old. It might be the average
Absolutely.
Person who can afford the land is 65 years old, but there is plenty of people wanting to farm. And so
plenty of people that
is,
are currently farming and that are of a younger age, and I will be out there
2:30 to 5:30.
The younger generation, yeah, from 2:30 to 5:30. I encourage other people to come down as well. I will be bringing other fellow farmers that are of a younger generation to represent, and it is really important for those who believe in agriculture, whether you're currently farming or not, to come out and represent, because this is our future for all of us here on Kauai and for us throughout the islands and as a nation or and as
yep. And so
nation
I'm kind of
really
rushing you along because I got other callers and we're almost at the end of the show, but it is important for the government to understand that the farms that produce food have a different set of needs than the commodity crop farmers. And so the commodity crop farmers have a louder voice, and so we're not trying to drown their voice out, but we're trying to raise up the voice of the people who are providing food. And Eric, are you going to be at Earth Day at Malama, Kauai on April 24th? That's a Sunday. I think it starts at 8:30.
I will be there as well. I'm looking forward to meeting with more people and just keeping this great dialogue going of having more
perfect
agriculture here in Kauai.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much, Felicia, and aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. You're going to have to be real quick.
Hi, Felicia. It's Bridget Hammerquist. Thanks for having us.
Hey, Bridget, and thank you for calling in. You know, this show has been about the environment, and I know that you have been really focused on the environment and particularly of the water at Mahaulepu.
Yes, we've been working for about 2 years now and just wanted to share with your listeners. We also want sustainable farming that preserves the environment, preserves our water, keeps it clean. We had some recent coverage in the Garden Island. Basically, the department came out with part one of a sanitary survey, but hold on because they intend to do much more extensive testing that's going to take the rest of the year, and they're going to release a part two. There's issues looming as to what's causing a lot of fecal bacteria in the waters that come from the Waiopili onto the beach. And so we're working with experts on that right now who are assessing it. We've got a Federal Clean Water Act case going. There's no permit issued to the dairy to pollute. They are developing the farm. There is a temporal relationship between these fecal bacteria. It only increased to these exorbitant numbers in the thousands, 8,000, 15,000, 17,000, 22,000 colonies in just 3 ounces of water of fecal bacteria called Enterococci. So that happened after the dairy started its preparation. Why? We don't know. But we do know that the state is considering cesspools and injection wells in the Kaloa Poipu community, saying maybe that's somehow traveling over in a karst lava tube formation. We don't know why that would suddenly erupt in 2014. They also suggested that there could be some residue from biosolids, treated human waste that was allowed to be dumped in Mahaulepu. DOH permitted it. Grow Farm leased the land. That went on from 2003 to 2014 when DOH finally decided not to renew those leases because they were concerned about the fecal bacteria. And in part one of their report, probably our biggest concern was they said they're not worried about a health risk. But then as I read on, because I thought to myself, how did they get there? I saw that they said there was no evidence of recreational use of those waters. And I felt really bad, Felicia, because we had provided the department with pictures of children, parents, babies lolling in the waters from the Waiopili where it crosses the beach, comes to Gillen's house. There's this wonderful, warm, soft pool and a nice sandy area that people sit in and play in, and it is loaded with not just the Enterococcus. That's the one they count. But the state describes on their website where that bacteria appears, they know there's other bacteria present, leptospirosis and many others. So it's a battle. We're working on it. We want the environment to stay well. People need more information. We invite them to go to friendsofmahaulepu.org. That's our website, friendsofmahaulepu.org. If they're not familiar with Mahaulepu, there's great pictures on the site. Great articles, good coverage, and good people like KKCR who help us get the message out.
Well, thank you so much. And you know what? I've looked at the site there, and I've looked at some of the information. And I, you know what? At KKCR, we always want to be really balanced. And so sometimes I have to, you know, talk to people and look to see that I'm bringing out a fair story. And for what it's worth, I have invited Hawaii Dairy Farms in several different times. They have had some probably legitimate reason where they have canceled the show that day, that they didn't end up coming. But I have, it hasn't been a while since I've really reached to get them in here. But I know that the concern group have asked to come in. So if Hawaii Dairy Farm would like to come in, they can come in. When I looked at some of these things that you guys have, and then also in speaking and looking at what goes on there, something I did see is that the Department of Health did give the Hawaii Dairy Farm this information, you know, probably 8 months ahead of the public. That's a little, you know, really? That seems like a long time.
I know.
So, you know, that kind of weakens the trust level of, or I would say, maybe it's more fair to say, they certainly aren't being unfair to the dairy. They're giving them just about every possible opportunity to brace themselves and be prepared and to have a different angle of looking at these things. I mean, they're getting the evidence 8 months ahead of the people. So they are not being treated unfairly. They might be being what could be said being treated super fairly.
I think I would agree. They said the department acknowledged in their sanitary survey that they did it because of all the information the public brought to them, especially Surfrider. A real shout out to Surfrider, who tests our beaches, our streams all over the island, and watches for any evidence of pollution. They're actually on a contract, a partnership with DOH. They have the Surfrider Blue Water Task Force, and thank heaven for them, because, you know, we're all kept safer because of Surfriders, and they're all volunteers. It's all a dollar donation that supports all their labs and their testing, and they're nationwide. They're actually international.
Yeah.
So it's a super organization that helps our environment.
May 7th, show up at that party if you can, Bridget, because I want you to see my baby play music. They're having an event for them. So Jazz with John is coming up next. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Felicia.
Aloha.
Aloha.
And then we're going to hear for just a moment. We want people, you know, donating. Pretty soon we're going to have our fund drive. So we're going to hear from Amy Goodman, and then I might take a very, very short call, and then we have a short notice on the council report, and then we're going to have Jazz with John.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. We might be having a little bit of a sound challenge, I'm hearing. So Jazz with John will be coming up next. Kalasara, thank you so much for coming in. Do you have a final thought for the listeners?
Oh, thanks, Felicia, for having me. I'm sorry, I can't think of anything this moment.
Okay, all right. Well, you can say aloha.
Aloha.
Yes, we always appreciate having different community guests in the studio. Marshall, do you have a final aloha? And then we're having the council report.
Well, it's real nice to have you in here, Kalasar. Thank you so much, Felicia. Had a great show. And we'll see you next Thursday, right?
Yes. So I won't be here next Tuesday. We'll be in on Thursday. And it's going to be a live thing. Jimmy is going to be doing the show from Kapa'a. So here's the county council report, and then it will be Jazz with John.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of April 11th. There will be a council committee meeting at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, April 13th. The meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here's some highlights from the agenda. The Public Works, Parks, and Recreation Committee has two bills on their agenda. They are Bill 2612 for an ordinance to amend the county code relating to the plumbing code, and also Bill 2613 for an ordinance to amend the county code relating to the electrical code. Both bills were deferred from March 16th. The Planning Committee also has two bills on their agenda, and they are Bill number 2609 for an ordinance amending the county code relating to homestays. This was deferred from January 21st, and Bill 2619 for an ordinance amending the county code relating to homestays. Restricting homestays to the VISTA designation areas in the county of Kauai was the applicant. A public hearing was held on this on April 6, 2016. The Budget and Finance Committee has on their agenda Bill 2610 Draft 1 for an ordinance to establish a general excise and use tax surcharge for the County of Kauai, and this was deferred from March 2nd. For more information on meetings or meeting archives, please visit the county's website. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.